The Financial Sense Midweek Edition with Jim Poplava. Delving in-depth with authors and experts into the key economic issues.
Well, if we look at the market returns this year, the stock market is back up in single digits, but there's one asset class that's doing spectacularly this year, and that's gold and silver. Gold prices, even though correcting, are up 22%. Silver is up over 41%. So if you're thinking of investing in the sector, do you buy bullion? Do you buy coins, ETFs, or stocks? And that's the subject of this week's FSN In Depth. Joining me on the program is Don Durrett. He's authored a new book, How to Invest in Gold and Silver, a complete guide from an investor's viewpoint. And Don, just before we get into your book, let's talk a little bit about your background and why you wrote this book. According to your intro, you've been investing in gold since 1991, gold stock since 2004. Why write this book now?
Well, I guess we could start at the beginning. I read a book in 1989 that basically turned me into a gold bug. But at the time, I didn't have any money. But in 1991, my grandfather gave us a little bit of money, and the only investment that I could think of that I wanted to invest my money was gold. I invested in the Franklin Gold Fund in 1991. That initial investment has been incredibly successful for me. And then in 2004, all through the 90s, that's the only thing that I invested in was gold. Everybody that I knew was investing in the stock market, and they were somewhat questioning, what am I doing investing in gold? But I'm a bit of an visionary. I'm a metaphysical writer. I've written 9 books. So in 2004, I basically had invested enough money in the Franklin Gold Fund that I wanted to diversify. And I thought about investing in more gold, and a friend of mine said, why don't you look at silver? And so in 2004, I looked at silver, and the only way that you can really invest in silver, when I saw there was not a lot of choices as far as the mining, because only 20% of silver is basically captured by silver mining companies. So I started investing in mining companies in 2004. And I actually had to learn how to do it and basically have been very successful doing that. And then I finished my last book, and I was looking for a project. And I thought, well, when I was first started out investing in gold and silver, I could not find a good book on the subject. So I thought, well, I can do that. I can write a book on how to invest in gold and silver. I'm a writer. I know how to basically, I think, a key. And I know all the various steps that are required. There's basically investing in gold and silver, investing in mining stocks, requires a lot of different details, a lot of different areas of information, which you learn over time. But it's more of a science than an art, I think. It's more of an understanding what to do. It's kind of an ABC, I think. I think anybody could basically read my book, maybe read it 2 or 3 times, and over a period of 6 to 12 months can basically become a very good investor in gold and silver. So that's why I started.
Now, in your first chapter, you begin with silver. Why invest in silver? And on the day you and I are speaking, Don, there's a Bloomberg story out. Silver shipments from China, the biggest exporter, may plunge by 40% this year. So let's begin with your first chapter. Why do you think silver is attractive?
In 2004, when I decided to invest in silver, when I basically read about silver and understood the silver story, I was somewhat shocked, somewhat taken aback by it. Because I looked at the story and I thought, how can silver be this cheap under this scenario? First thing that I found out was that in 1945, there were 10 billion ounces of bullion and coins above ground. And today, there's only 1.5 billion. Some people think it's only 1 billion. So what happened to all that silver? Why is all the inventory? Why is it shrinking? And the reason why is because manufacturers basically require more silver than is mined on an annual basis. Every year, we get a deficit. So there's actually less silver above ground in bullion and coin form than there is gold. So silver is actually more precious than gold, which is absolutely amazing. Now, of course, there's about 15 billion ounces of silver in jewelry and in artwork, but that's going to have to be recycled. I don't think it will basically be recycled fast enough. So the thing that's amazing is that 90% of the supply, annual supply of, or supply of silver, is used by fabrication. So only 10% is available for investors. So what we're looking at here is a potential, a very strong potential of a shortage. And that's the reason why I really like silver. I was focused only on gold, if you will, for over a decade, and then I looked at silver, and I thought silver is actually a better story because of this potential of a shortage. Now, the other thing that's really nice about silver is that the silver that is above ground, the $1.5 billion, nearly all of it is not for sale. The reason why is because it is sitting in warehouses. For example, the ETFs, nearly half of the supply is sitting in a warehouse, and that's basically not for sale for physical delivery. The same with coins. Coins are basically held by individuals, private investors. That silver, is the only way you can get your hands on it is if they sell it. So the size of silver comes out of the ground, only about 10% of that, when you include recycled silver as well. And it's about approximately over a little over 800 million ounces of silver. So you're looking at about, on an annual basis, only about 100 million ounces of silver, new fresh silver, is basically available for investors. That's only on $20 an ounce. That's only $2 billion. So the silver market is only $2 billion, which is really small. Now, that $2 billion, in order for it to expand, you're going to have competition or bidding between manufacturers and investors. So the upward potential of silver is very, very strong. As a matter of fact, I think that it could very well go over $100. And the reason why is because, we'll talk about why invest in gold. The reason why is because if gold goes to $3,000 an ounce, which I think is a very high likelihood it happens, the ratio of gold to silver is currently 60 to 1. If it reduces to 30 to 1, that means silver will go to 100. Now, historically, back when silver was considered money, the ratio was 16 to 1. So for it to get to 30 to 1, I think, is a very strong possibility.
Let's talk about the gold-silver ratio, because on the day we're speaking, it's roughly about 56. More recently, it's been up as high as 60. And traditionally, if you take a look at a moving average over the last decade, it's gotten as low as in the low 40s. So let's talk about that metric, the gold-to-silver ratio, and how that can be used by investors to decide whether they should weight their portfolio more towards silver or gold.
Yes. Basically, as silver increases, as the price goes up, since silver is more affordable, you're going to have more people move into silver, and you're going to start to see that ratio go down. Silver right now, when it's produced out of the ground for miners, it's a 10-to-1 ratio. So basically, there's no reason why silver can't go down to 10-to-1. If you have especially shortages pop up, you cannot have shortages in gold because it's only gold is only 10% goes into fabrication, but silver, 90%. Goes into fabrication. So you could have a shortage. So the shortages are basically going to drive demand for silver up. As that demand drives up, the ratio is going to tighten. And I think 30 is a very conservative number, in my opinion. Some people think it's going to go all the way down to 1-to-1, which I don't think is going to happen. 15 or 25, I think, could happen. But 30 is the number I'm looking at. And I'm thinking that gold, for example, has a good chance of going to 3,000. So my target for silver is $100.
Now, let's move on to gold, because this will be the 10th consecutive year on the day we're speaking. Gold is correcting about $30, but still, gold is up 22%. It's been up double digits every single year in this decade. So let's talk about gold. Why should one invest? And, you know, it's amazing, Don, when you see this rise in gold that we've seen, almost touching 1,400 recently. The bubble heads on cable television don't understand why gold's going up. It doesn't pay a dividend. You can't analyze it in terms of cash flow, so they don't understand it. But I think you and I believe gold's going much higher from here. So let's talk about gold.
Yes, this is one of my favorite subjects, if you will. Actually, if you just look back at the 20th century, cash has basically been king. When I was in college, basically I said the lowest risk asset you could hold was cash or bonds. And they were essentially riskless assets. That has changed. Today, gold is the ultimate low-risk asset. People are starting to learn this. It is the ultimate way to protect your wealth. I've been telling people for years, all the way back in the early 90s, that you need to be exposed to gold because of the coming changes to the economy. The reason why gold is such a good asset is because it is rare. There's only approximately 128,000 tons of gold, which will fit into two Olympic-sized swimming pools. That's all the gold there is. And that gold is not growing very quickly. It only grows at 2,500 tons a year, so it's basically a very limited supply. And the thing is, that makes gold such a good asset is that it's liquid. Gold has been money for thousands of years and will be money for the foreseeable future, and you can convert that into any currency. The one thing, the reason why gold is not caught on, and the reason why gold stocks are only 2% of the stock market, which is incredible, is that you have to understand two things to understand gold. You have to understand the U.S. economy, and you have to understand peak oil. Now, the U.S. economy, people are not convinced that it's not going to roar back to life. There is only one risk to owning gold, and that risk is the U.S. economy coming back to life and growing. If the U.S. economy grows at a 3% rate over, say, 12 to 18 months, the price of gold will probably go in half. But is that likely? If you look at the U.S. economy and you understand history, you understand where we are, you understand the amount of debt we have. For example, all you have to really do is look at the housing industry for, say, the next 3 years. The housing industry, in order for it to work out, all the foreclosures we have in the system is going to take at least 3 years. Next year, for example, the price of houses is not going to start up. So you have basically a downward pressure on the U.S. economy, which I think we're going to get a second dip recession. I actually have written a book on this called The Demise of America, so you can understand where I come from. So that's the number one thing, is that the only thing that really has a risk for gold is the U.S. economy. The second thing that you have to understand about gold is peak oil. And a lot of people, it's amazing, people invest in gold do not do research on peak oil. Like yourself, Jim, you're probably one of the few people that's done more research than me. I've done over 1,000 hours of research on peak oil. The reason why I did that much research is because I feel that oil is the key to the economy. Cheap energy. Without cheap energy, the economy cannot grow. So I wanted to make sure I understood peak oil. Now, we have an energy crisis that's going to occur before the year 2015. Sometime between 2012 and 2015, we are going to have an energy crisis. When that energy crisis hits, the U.S. economy is going to take a hit. So if you look at those two factors, it makes gold that much less risk asset. It makes gold almost the go-to asset, if you will. I actually think that gold is a riskless asset, for example, gold under $1,000. So if gold, and as the economy gets worse, that riskless asset increases. So we could really, $1,300, $1,400 gold could be a riskless asset. I don't know that yet. Down the road, as of today, I would say $1,000. If you invested under $1,000, you are holding a riskless asset.
Let's talk about investing in precious metals. And in Chapter 3, you talk about bullion in coins. And there's various ways that we can own bullion today. You can own it outright in bar form, whether it's a silver bar or even small bars of gold. You can buy coins. There's numismatics. We have ETFs. There's gold, silver, futures. Don, why don't you cover those briefly? And what are the advantages and disadvantages of each one of these choices?
The one thing that I want to do with my book is to let people understand how to manage risk. And to understand there's various different ways to invest in gold. And this is the foundation of what we're starting. This is bullion and coins. All the way up to early stage explorers. So I want people to understand each different level and what the risk associated with each one. So the first level, of course, is your foundation, which is bullion or coins, which is essentially, again, a riskless asset if you purchase gold under $1,000. So there's two things about bullion and coins. Number one is physical possession. That is the best way to protect yourself. If you're not comfortable owning physical silver or gold, the next one is to purchase it and have it stored for you. If you want to have it stored for you, you want to make sure that it's insured and allocated. You basically don't want paper, silver, or gold. A good place to do that is a place like Bullion Vault. And basically, there's very low cost, annual basis, store it, and they have very low cost purchasing them. That's a good foundational start. Coins. I actually think that physical coins are a really good way to go for physical possession. For example, once you talk about gold, for example, only your multimillionaires are really going to be able to afford any types of bars. But coins, the one thing that's nice about coins is that they're very highly liquid. They're very easily convertible. They're very popular. For example, the Gold Eagle coins and the Silver Eagle coins, the ones that have been basically minted since 1986, that are non-numismatic. These are very, very popular coins. This year they're going to actually mint 40 million Silver Eagles, an enormous amount of coins, so you can measure the popularity. Now, the markups are significant, of course, but you're getting back the ability for something that's going to be very popular and easily convertible. The markups right now, they've increased. They're basically going up and down. For Silver Eagles, you're looking at anywhere from 10 to 20% or even higher, depending. In gold, coins are somewhere about 4 to 8%. 4% is not easily to get. So you're going to have to pay a bit over spot for these, and sometimes a little bit more than you might want to pay. But once you have those physical coins, those coins are going to be very easily transferable and are going to be able to protect your wealth. One thing I want to mention about, lastly, about buying physical coins, that, or if you're going to buy silver bullion, is that you have to be very careful about the markups. In my book, I mentioned some of the better places to look. They widely vary, if you will. So you have to look around. What are the best prices? Also, you want to look for companies that give you delivery quickly. You don't want to wait 60 days or 90 days for delivery. You want to look for companies that will give you no charge on shipping and they'll insure it for free. There are companies out there that will do that.
What about numismatic coins? You talk about double eagles, Morgan silver dollars. What are the advantages and disadvantages? I know when you get into numismatics, the markups can be rather significant. You really need to know what you're doing here, because depending on the grade of the coin itself and its rarity will determine price. But sometimes if you're not real familiar with coin prices in that area, you can pay a significant premium.
Yes, exactly. You do have to be careful. The reason I mentioned numismatic coins is from Bob Chapman, who's another commentator. He mentioned that back in 1980, the numismatics really took off. And he thinks it's going to happen again. So I mentioned it in my book as it's basically from an investor standpoint. Old double eagle coins, of course, they're almost like the ultimate collector's item. So in some respects, yes, they're investments, somewhat in collector's items as well. But there's a good possibility that we could get some really good returns on some of these numismatics. I actually mentioned how they grade the coins in the book. I mentioned that basically you want to make sure that you get the MS date. MS-70 is the best that you can get. You want to get these that are MS states, so that you get the high, that's where you're going to get the high quality, and you have to be careful. Make sure you don't get really big markup, but there are potential for some really significant returns on some of these numismatic coins. We could see a really run on them, so that's why I mentioned them.
Let's talk about the ETFs. Let's just say that I don't know anything about going into a coin shop. I don't want to own physical gold personally because I don't know where to store it. I'd be concerned about security. So let's talk about the ETFs of owning bullion. They're even going to come out with an ETF for copper, but let's talk about, for example, GLD and SLV.
Yeah, sure. I wanted to invest in silver, and I didn't want to pay storage costs. The reason why I invested in silver is because when I first started investing, I had a really strong foundation of gold mutual funds. And so I wanted a little bit bigger return. So I was looking at 500% return when I first started, so I went for silver, and I actually invested in SLV. And the reason why is exactly what you said. It's very easy to do. It's very cheap. The premiums are very, very low on SLV and GLD. You don't have to pay for storage costs. And the other thing that's nice about them is they immediately basically take the price of silver. So if silver spikes today up to $30, that price will immediately be reflected in the price of SLV as it trades. Whereas the silver mining companies, they might not get that valuation of $30. It might take a while because the investors think the price is going to come down. So you won't get the full credit for the spike. But the ETFs, you'll get the full credit immediately. However, so those are really the benefits. Very easy to do, very cheap. The other thing is it trades like a stock. You don't have to pay capital gains until you actually sell the stock. But the one thing you have to be careful of on these ETFs, there's a lot of commentators out there saying stay away from both of these, is that do they actually have the silver or the gold that they claim to do? SLV, basically, last time I looked, they say this is how many ounces of silver we have in our warehouse. But in their perspectives, they basically don't say that they audit their silver on an annual basis. A lot of people say, well, if they're not auditing on an annual basis, can I really trust these? There's a new one out there called SIVR who audits twice a year. And I think that one is safer. There's another one in Canada, CEF, that does silver and gold both. They audit twice a year. You pay a little bit bigger premium for CEF, about 7%, but I think it's a little safer. The one thing about ETFs, for me, you have to be aware of, is if, let's say that we have some financial problems and they have a trade of hands and then they have to audit them, And then during that audit, they find out that they don't have all the silver or all the gold. You could see a big drop in the price of that particular ETF. So there's a little bit of a risk with ETFs. Also with silver, I think there's a potential you could see a liquidation, for example, of SLV. So let's say SLV gets up to 500 million ounces. Currently, they're over 300 million. Let's say they get up to 500 million, and then we have a huge shortage of silver, and nobody can find any physical silver, especially, you know, all the manufacturers depend on silver. Again, fabrication is nearly 800 million ounces a year. Not quite that much, but very significant. So if there's some shortages in silver, they might say, well, let's just liquidate SLV. Throw that out there. That is part of the risk.
I want you to touch upon options just briefly. I mean, I know as a professional money manager, we use them to hedge. For example, we're hedged right now. So on a day that gold is falling and the HUI is down, we have something to offset, and it allows us to hold on to our long position. So why don't you talk about options for a minute?
Yeah, I put in options in the book basically because options are very valuable for hedging, so you should understand how to hedge with options. I actually have a hedge right now for my portfolio. I actually own an option in FAZ with a triple bear financial ETF. So I actually have an option December 21st, 2012. And so basically, if the stock market crashes anytime between now and January 2012, I'm going to get a significant payback because options basically have extreme leverage, if you will. So they're very, very risky, but they're good for hedging. Because if you think, right, personally, I think there's a good chance we could see a stock market crash. So if we have a crash and let's say all and mining portfolio drops, say, 25%, I'd like to be able to have some cash at that moment to buy in at the bottom. The other thing that's nice about options is that, for example, silver. I think silver has explosive upside. So you can actually get buy an option, say, 18, I think you can go all the way 2 years into the future, 18 months, 2 years in the future. So you can actually do an option, do a call option, for example, on SLV. And so if the price of silver jumps up from here, let's say it jumps up to $35, you could have a 500% return. And the break-even point isn't that bad. The break-even point, for example, if you bought the option fairly close to the current price, the downside risk is not that bad if we are in an explosive movement. So options are good ways to leverage either, for example, a big upside move, hedge on the downside.
Let's move on to investing in the mining companies. Of course, you have the majors, you have the mid-tiers, and you have the juniors. Let's take each one of those.
Okay, start with majors. That's actually, I work my way down from a risk standpoint. So after bullion, you get to the majors. Now, the majors, and I also stick in gold mutual funds into this group. They do one thing well, and that is they beat the price of gold. However, recently, it's been pretty close. Since 2006, the gold majors and the price of gold has pretty much tracked each other. But I think that's going to start changing. I just checked a couple days, and it was like 1.5 to 1. The HUI basically index follows the majors. So the HUI was basically going up 1.5 versus 1% for price of gold. So I think over time, I think these are very low-risk investments, personally. I think they're going to start paying dividends, which is going to drive the price up. And also, the one thing about majors is I look at it from a risk standpoint. And so the professionals define a major as production greater than 500,000 ounces a year, but I actually define them using market cap. If a gold producer has a market cap greater than $1 billion, I basically label it as a major from a risk standpoint. So if a company has more than that, I basically say, okay, this company has a low risk, and I basically put it in that category, that level. And I put a little wiggle room. Let's say it go up to $1.3 billion. And so that's where you want, these are foundations. You start with bullion, and you might do an ETF, and then you want some gold majors, a few of them, or you could do a mutual fund and get that low risk foundation in your portfolio. And you can expect to get, I think, when gold goes to 2,000, about a 200% return. It could be a lot more, depending on where this gold runs. So these are actually low risk, nice return. I mean, how many places can you invest today, and I think it's low risk, and get, you know, 100%, 200% return over the next, say, 3 years? Very few places. So this is a good foundational place.
And you almost may see, Don, with a lot of the majors like Barrick and Newmont increasing their dividends significantly, you might see them ending their way in institutional portfolios. Because I remember when I got in the business in the late 70s, it was not unusual back then to see trust companies own oil companies, oil service companies, and a few gold companies like Placer and Homestake.
I think that is very likely to happen. Currently, stock market, approximately $15 trillion, the U.S. stock market, about $15 trillion in value. And the total for gold and silver is less than $230 billion. That is less than 2% of the total stock market. So I think that you're going to have a move into the mining companies. I think right now we're starting to see a switch. People still think of gold and silver as risky commodities. They don't think of it as the low-risk, riskless asset. But we're going to start to see a move out of that. And when you do, you're going to see more move into the mining companies. And as the price of gold gets higher, you are going to see dividends increase. I think that's inevitable.
I almost look as the Barricks and the Newmonts like investing in IBM in the 90s. I mean, you made money in IBM, but the real money was made in the Ciscos and the Intels, which were really the growth companies. So on that side, let's talk about the intermediate companies.
Yes, I agree with you. I think that the sweet spot for risk-reward is the intermediate. And I basically label these, again, with my own definition, I call them mid-tier producers. These are companies that are producing. They have a market cap less than $1 billion with at least 80,000 ounces of gold or 4 million ounces of silver. Now, from my experience, I've found that that's kind of like the break. That's the point where the risk level really drops. Once a company gets production over those numbers, you really start to see risk go down. You really start to see investors being more comfortable with those stocks, and they don't tend to drop. They tend to rise, price gold. You basically, if you want to get a nice return, if you're focusing on it, you want to get the best returns you can, you're not so conservative. And I think these are actually low risk. If you want to invest in companies that have market caps between, say, $200 million and $1 billion, these are companies that are basically our growth companies, like you mentioned the Cisco. So these companies, a lot of them are just starting to produce. You know, they're up to 100,000 ounces or 125,000 ounces, but they're growing. So they can use this cash flow to basically organically grow their company by buying small juniors that are very cheap or drilling their properties out. So these are the companies that you really want to invest in for low risk, high return. One of the things that I learned was that you want to focus on quality. You want to make sure that companies have flagship properties. I think this is the most important thing that I've learned from investing. What I found was, how I define a flagship property is if it has 2 million ounces of gold or 40 million ounces of silver. Now, they don't have to have that much, but they have to have a high chance or a high likelihood of reaching that. And if you focus on companies, even mid-tier producers, make sure that they have that kind of, those kind of reserves in the ground. Then you found a quality company, and you're going to do really well.
What about juniors? I mean, we've seen some spectacular takeouts. We had Ken Ross's taking out of Redback Mining, and we've seen, for example, Ken Ross earlier take out Aurelian. There have been some spectacular successes with juniors, but as you know, Don, for every one junior that's a quality company, you probably have 10, 15 that are garbage.
Exactly. This is one of the reasons I wrote the book. Now I understand this. Mid-tier, you're going to get a 300-400% return. To juniors, and that would be really good. That'd be fantastic return. But you can get that from the mid-tiers. But you're not going to get the 1,000% return, the big home run. You have to go to the juniors. So the one thing that I did with the juniors is I actually broke them up into six categories. So I understood the risk. And what I didn't realize I was doing is that I was investing down at the bottom categories that were speculation. And I didn't realize it. It took me a while to learn that. So the first level is a near-term mid-tier producer. These are companies like Great Panther Silver, Brigus Gold, that are going to be mid-tier producers within 1 to 3 years. Basically a low risk, but it's a junior. Next one is number seven, second level of the juniors, is what's called a late-stage development company. This is a company like Canadian Zinc or Solidan Gold who are going to begin production within 1 to 3 years. Next is small producers. Companies like Metnor Resources, Exelon Resources. These are companies that are producing, but they're not going to be mid-tier producers within 3 years. Next level is early-stage explorer with enough reserves for a mine. This is companies like Rubicon Minerals or ATAC Resources. These are companies that are almost sure bets to get mined. However, it's going to take a while. It's going to take a long time. So once you get down, once you work your way down the risk level, your risk level is low here. This is the fourth different type of a junior. It's low, but you might have to wait before the actual value of the company when you get your return. However, I like investing in these companies, but you have to, they're more longer term investments, if you will. Companies are valued basically on three things: producing ounces, ounces of reserves in the ground, and the current value of gold. And so this company, for example, an early stage company like Rubicon, they're not going to get valued until they actually get into production. So you're going to have to sit on that stock for a while and wait. I think it's undervalued at $4, but you're going to have, before it gets to $8, we're probably going to have to wait some time. Now, the last two are the speculators. And the way that you avoid the risk on these two speculators is you focus on flagship properties, using my definition. If you do that, you're going to really reduce your risk. The fifth type of junior is an early stage explorer with almost enough reserves for a mine. A good example are Gold Bullion Development Corp or Golden Hope Mines. These are companies that usually have market caps under $100 million. They basically have really good drill results, but they haven't gotten up to that level 9 stage yet. And again, it's going to take a while before you actually get the value back in your investment, so it's going to be a long-term investment. The last one is early stage explorer where potential exists. Now, this is the king of risk, and this is where people make their mistakes. Once you're down here, you're going to have to basically make a good, educated guess that they're going to find a flagship property. A couple examples here are Evolving Gold or Lithium International. These are companies that have decent drill results. It looks like they have potential to find a flagship property, but you're just speculating.
And then, Don, putting it all together, we've talked about bullion. We've talked about coins, ETFs. We've talked about majors, intermediates, and juniors. Why don't you put together, sort of bring this all together for our investors? So how do you make money? I would suspect that you start out at the bottom of the pyramid of risk, which would be your bullion, which would have the lowest risk to it, physical bullion. Then you work your way up to your majors, then maybe intermediates and juniors. But take us through the process. How do you make money in this sector?
First of all, you have to understand your degree of risk. If you're like me, you want to get the full, basically, possibility of what this market can provide for you, basically, you want to have the entire pyramid covered, if you will. You want to have an array of companies in all levels. That might, take a little bit of money to do, if you will. But, and again, the less risk you have, the more you can stay on the top. You can stay in the mid-tiers and you can stay in the majors. And then you want to make a little bit more return, and you go down to the juniors. And you basically make sure that you basically create a portfolio, a balanced portfolio. That's what I think. I think you can actually get, myself, I got in a little early. Now we're up to $1,400 gold, almost $1,400 gold. So it's becoming a little bit more difficult to get, say, a 500% return. But I think 400% returns are there for the taking for smart investors who get a nice portfolio. But the one thing, the way that you make money, okay, first you start with a balanced portfolio, but the one way you make money is how you identify which stocks you stick in that portfolio. And I've found from my experience that there's three primary factors you have to look at when you're picking stocks. And the first one, by far the most important, is the property. You want to make sure they have a flagship property or they have potential for a flagship property. And again, this is 2 million ounces of gold or 40 million ounces of silver. Now, if they do have that property and they're growing, then you've just found a very quality company. Also, you want to look at forecasted growth. Are they drilling out their properties? How many properties do they do? How many drill prospects do they have? So that's number one. You got to focus on that. The second primary factor in finding a stock is the market cap. The lower, the better. You're basically looking for a company that has a flagship property or potential one and has a low market cap. Then you're going to get bigger bang for your buck, if you will. Ideally, you want to find companies with a market cap under $200 million. But companies with flagships, it's not that easy to find. But there are some out there. But then you have to balance your portfolio. How many of these are you going to risk? You might see 10 companies you think have potential to get to that flagship. Well, those 10 could be very risky, so you have to balance it out. Once you get beyond $300 million market cap, your growth potential starts to drop off. But that doesn't mean some of these companies aren't really good investments at $400 or $500 million. So that's market cap. Number three is the share structure. You want to make sure, that they don't have a real large share structure. The reason why is because it's much more explosive price, if you will, if it has tighter share structure. Tighter just means less. For example, let's say that you have a stock in a company that only has 10 million shares. If that company goes to a $1 billion market cap, the share is going to be worth $100. So if you bought it at $1, that's a 10,000% return. Now, there's not very many companies out there with 10 million, but that just shows you what the potential is. So you really want to stay under that $100 million, And I guess we can talk about dilution and fully diluted. You want to basically want to try to find a share structure with fully diluted under 100 million. But I'll actually go up to 250 million if I really like the company. But once over I get over 250 million of fully diluted shares, you're reducing your potential profit, if you will. Now, the fully diluted, when you go and you get a stock quote, they show outstanding shares. But what they do not show is the outstanding options or the outstanding warrants out there. Those warrants and options usually will eventually turn into outstanding shares. And so you need to know that. You usually have to go to their web page and find out what the fully shares are. So those three things are the primary things that you want to look for when you start picking stocks. The next thing, a lot of people put management as one of their primary factors. I actually disagree with that. Management is really important for companies that are growing. Companies that are growing, it's very important because mining is a very difficult industry. So if you put your first mine into production, putting that second mine into production or going out and buying another company and growing the company, management is very important. But when you're a smaller company, let's say you have a market cap under $150 billion, I actually think that the geologist is probably more important than the management. So I usually look at management more as a red flag, green flag. You want to find a company that's a pro-investor. And so companies where the management, they own the stock, and that they talk about their investors as if there's somebody that they're looking out for. So these are companies that are kind of investor-friendly, if you will. The other thing you want to look at is the location of the mine. I prefer Canada. Anything in Canada, and it has a flagship property, I really like it. The reason why is because in Canada, they treat their miners as if they were farmers in America. Other places that are really great places to invest are Brazil, Chile, Peru. These are companies that are kind of like Canada. They're kind of mine-friendly. For example, I think Chile, 40% of their GDP is mining. Mexico, I have a lot invested in Mexico, but I'm a little leery of Mexico, even though I still invest into it. The reason why I'm leery is because of peak oil. Mexico, 40% of their government's budget comes from oil exports. Those oil exports are going to come to an end in 2013 or 2014. So Mexico is going to stop exporting oil, and they're going to be looking for money. I think they're going to go after the miners, so I'm a little concerned there. Lastly, cost. You don't want to really invest in a high-cost mine because investors are going to reward low-cost mines, and there's a real easy way to get the cost per ounce. This is actually the cost per ounce that it costs them to mine. Take the spot price, and you take one-third of it. Whatever, for example, today the spot price, one-third of the spot price is about $450 for gold. If you have a company that's mining for about that, it's a low-cost producer. Then you take two-thirds of the spot price, which is about $900. Anything around there is a high-cost producer.
Well, listen, Don, you have covered this material quite well. I mean, for an investor, I think, that is not familiar with getting into the sector, whether they're thinking of dipping their toes, maybe buying some bullion, they may want to start out with an ETF or a coin, or working their all the way up to, let's say, owning the stocks, or even someday juniors. Job well done, my friend, and highly recommend your book. We've been speaking with Don Durrett. He's author of a new book, How to Invest in Gold and Silver, A Complete Guide from an Investor's Viewpoint. Don, it's a pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you for having me on, Jim.
You've been listening to the Financial Sense News Hour with Jim Poplava. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell securities. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the opinions of Jim Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerances. You should always consult a qualified financial advisor before making investment decisions. Financial Sense will not be liable to anyone for financial losses resulting from companies profiled or information provided on this program. The Financial Sense News Hour was produced by Steel on Steel Productions. Join us again throughout the week for more in-depth news and financial analysis at financialsense.com.